All
off to a good start.
All right, everyone, take your seats. Listen, we're getting into that time of year. The weather outside is getting frightful, but this podcast, it's going to keep staying so delightful. With me, as always, the man is internationally known. He's universally loved, a man of the people, and the patron saint of smoke. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor AG.
That might have been the best intro any of us has ever done.
Except for that part of the first one, I couldn't remember how my tongue was supposed to move in my mouth.
If this is your first time listening to our podcast, those things don't happen. If you're a regular, you know that they just happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, today is my learning lesson.
What's my learning lesson? Your teaching lesson.
A teaching lesson, yes.
I look forward to these. Like, you know, we do the things where we're fully in, both of us will research and stuff like that. I have a very scant knowledge of what we're going to talk about today, but because I know you know so much of it, and the tidbits that you do feed me about this kind of stuff,
uh-huh,
they get me just fucking psyched. Because it's like, this is character study type stuff. This isn't a study of a civilization or an event where we're trying to piece together and kind of figure stuff out. Like, the character study, when we are close enough to these people's existence that we can, like, really dig in and have information about them. I love fucking hearing this stuff.
Yeah, it's... Wrestling is near and dear to my heart, and every time we do these episodes and I get to dive in for research, I kind of remember why I don't have a lot of friends that are wrestling fans, because there's just some people that take it so seriously.
Yeah, that's definitely the side that you mostly see. I was thinking about this too. I think I was like searching for a late night snack, and basically the ability for wrestling to be like, if you really boil it down, between when it first got televised, Monday Night Wars, you know, WCW, WWF, and then even before that, the local places.
Territories.
The territories. Yeah. Can you think of anything that is a longer running, like soap opera, athletic performance spectacle soap opera that has lasted like this?
Probably like the theater, but this is almost born of the theater.
Yeah.
Wrestling is, it was a carnival sideshow that people really enjoyed that then branched off. So there's so much kind of carny in it that it makes it really enjoyable for me.
So carny.
Then there's just the elements of, like, the people that are in it and the act in and of itself. A lot of people will say that wrestling's fake. I can't really disagree with them, because wrestling truly is, it's not a sport.
It's a predetermined outcome.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not fake in the sense that, like, the stuff isn't happening. Everything that you're seeing is real. Yes, they've learned how to do moves and all that kind of stuff in a way that increases the longevity of everything.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to be like, the NFL's not predetermined, because that's like the whole big thing now. But it's, yeah, the outcomes are predetermined to forward a storyline, to keep you invested that way. It's just like watching a soap opera where you don't know what's going to happen, but there's this element of like danger and athleticism to it. It's just, it's really fucking nuts.
It really truly is still kind of the theater, and that's the way that I look at it. These are sports entertainers. These people.
Are you a thespian? That kind of makes you a thespian if you're interested in athletic theater like that.
I don't know where that word comes from, but I'll take it.
Thebes. Remember Thebes, the thespians? They were the ones that, like, how you had the Athenians, but then you had the thespians. They were the ones that were, like, very, like, also intellectual. So that's why we get that terminology now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's the biggest part of the theater is really the players. And the players that we're going to talk about today, not really just in my consciousness, but it's going to be in the public's consciousness, because the movie Iron Claw is coming out, I believe, right around Christmas, like December 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And wrestling doesn't always get the main stage. I think the last big wrestling movie was probably The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke. Mm.
Fantastic movie, though.
Yeah,
amazing about it. Like, that's so crazy that you never think of a small-time journeyman wrestler and, like, the light. Well, we're going to get into kind of some of that.
Yeah,
right?
Very much of it. It's just, it's pretty incredible to see. And for me, being a wrestling fan, to see that a production company like A24.
Oh yeah.
Decided to choose, Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, MJF. He's actually a current wrestler, mm-hmm. is going to be in this. And just to see the star power that they've thrown behind this movie, it's going to be incredible. I wanted to kind of tell the story first, because there's always that question when you do see movies come out, like, did they punch this up?
Mm-hmm.
The Von Erich story is, like, unpunchable. I don't know what they're going to focus on, if they're going to focus on more.
It's something where you almost have to take stuff out in order to make it believable.
And that's really, I think, what it's got to be. I don't know if they're going to focus more. They're definitely not going to focus on the wrestling. And I kind of tried to. There's going to be some wrestling tidbits in here about some matches and different things. But for the most part, it's just the way that the Von Erich story is told. And it's one of the most unlucky family stories in existence. Wrestling is built so much on generations upon generations, and there's kind of some cool generation, not really clashes, but coming together of these generations of wrestlers. And it's...
Well, hold on there, Adam. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this, we do have to remember that we got a theme song we got to get into, okay. And then we got to tell the people to rate and review and subscribe. Oh, yeah, because the cream, it rises to the top.
Yeah, so get ready for my cream.
So we got the Von Erichs. Very, very contradictory to the Von Trapps.
Well, who were the Von Trapps?
Weren't they the ones from The Sound of Music?
I never saw it.
Something, okay.
The Jewish?
No, that was the one where they had to escape the... I don't think the Von Trapps... They were escaping from, like, Switzerland or Sweden, something like that.
What have the Swiss ever done wrong?
It's the one where the lady twirls around the moto. Sound of Music,
or yeah, the hills are alive.
Like, the hills. Yeah.
I thought they were running from somebody.
But very different from that.
Yeah. Yeah, in some cases, kind of the polar opposite. We're not going to start out with the Von Erichs. We're going to start out with the Atkinsons.
Okay.
The Atkinsons, it's just, this is their real name. This is the entire Von Erich name. Is Atkinson's the real name. Their fame and notoriety brought them so much attention that they just never went by anything but the Von Erichs anymore. Father Jack, born August 16th, 1929. Married his wife Doris when it was before he was 21. They got married pretty young. That was the year 1950. And just to start out the family lineage of power, strength, basically what made or what makes a good wrestler a wrestler. Jack got a scholarship to Southern Methodist University, SMU,
mm-hmm.
In Texas. He was born, I believe, outside of Denton. So right in the heart of Texas, he played football and threw the discus there. He actually held the Southwestern Conference that SMU was in. He held the record for the discus. So he was a very, very good athlete.
Good stock.
Yeah. Gave the NFL a shot. NFL was kind of a weird thing back then. There wasn't a whole lot of,
well, I mean, it was AFL and everything too, wasn't it?
And back in those times, the CFL was actually more popular.
Yeah.
Like, they were more established. So Jack went ahead and ran up to the CFL, gave himself a shot up there, ended up not working out. I'm assuming he was probably in Calgary when this happened, because he actually ran into somebody.
Is this just the standard story for, like, successful, like, wrestlers or wrestler-related people? Because this is literally what happened to Dwayne Johnson, right? He went to college, played football, didn't... The NFL wasn't calling, and he went up to the CFL.
Yeah, Dwayne's different because he is that he's technically the third generation.
That's true. He's already
of wrestlers, so he was already pipelined in.
Yeah, it's just weird the similarities. Even. Yeah.
Well, and this is where it all changes for Jack. Not being able to play football anymore, he runs into somebody named Stu Hart.
Is that of the Hart brothers lineage?
That's the father of Owen and Brett. And British Bulldog's wife, Jim the Anvil Nightheart, is also married into the family. Like, just the amount of wrestling royalty.
It's like the fucking mob or something, too. Well, like, it's been run by, like, the fathers, and it's like, you will learn the family business.
There's something up in Calgary where they're from called the Hart Dungeon, mm-hmm. and it's where Stu trained everybody. It's trained British Bulldog, Jim Neidhart, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, yeah. Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit. Like, anybody that was a great Canadian wrestler all came through the Hart Dungeon. A lot of wild cards
coming out of that gym.
Yeah, dude. And it was literally just in their basement with rubber mats on the floor. Like, it wasn't... It was a literal dungeon. So this place, these guys cut their teeth in, was absolutely just hell. And Jack ended up going through it. He actually earned a spot in what was called Stampede Wrestling, which was Stu Hart's actual federation. One of the territories. Yeah, it was his territory up in Calgary. It was called Klondike Wrestling at the time. And this is actually where we see the transition, because Jack Atkinson doesn't really have the right ring that you would want for a wrestler. It mm-hmm. sounds like just a modern day Joe. So we're talking about,
well, today you could be Jack the Assassin Atkinson.
True.
Yeah,
you could be,
but there's also something to be said that giving yourself a foreign name like the Von Erichs, it gives you a sense of like, and people don't know, like, you came from across, like, are you like a Viking or something? I don't know. Oh, buddy, okay.
You're,
am I on it?
You're thinking as a logical human being and not a wrestler. Oh, okay. Fan. Jack, debuting in 1953, was basically slated to be a heel. Now, as we learned in the Andre the Giant episode, you have faces and you have heels.
Mm-hmm.
Faces are going to be the people that get cheered for. Heels are the people that are supposed to be
coming from babyface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heels are going to be somebody that you want the crowd to boo and hate. 1953.
I didn't want to say this, but this is what I was getting at without trying to say it. Yes, Von Erichs at that point would make people seem, in 58, you're coming off 10, 12 years off of World War II. Who's still going to be the biggest villain? There were probably an entire, like, group of wrestlers that were either had Russian
yep.
connotations or Germans, and those would have always, kind of like we get back in, like, what was it, the 80s with the Iron Sheik. At that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to run into another heel coming into another territory named Skandar Akbar.
Okay.
So we can kind of see where this is going. But they made that Fritz von Erich
well.
A Nazi sympathizer. And
did he have that look, blonde, blue-eyed, kind of Norwegian, like German?
He looked a little bit more Hitlerish. But he definitely, it was kind of a darker blonde hair. Well, at
that point
hair.
In people's heads, they now were associating that not with just Aryans, but they knew how Hitler looked. And so they were like, of course, they all looked fucking different. Like, yeah, that makes sense.
Getting something over is just making the fans love it. The fans love to hate Fritz. Fritz actually had a fake brother that they named Waldo von Erich.
Wait, who was Fritz?
Fritz von Erich is Jack Atkinson.
Oh, he came in not as Jack von Erich. He came in as Fritz von Erich.
Yeah. Okay. So we Germaned this shit up really heavy. And the fans ate him and Waldo up. Man, they were evil German sympathizers. They would come into the ring. They would march.
That's what I'm saying. Not to get too far into the weeds and everything, but like, there is a sense of when these guys were agreeing to these characters and everything like that, there's almost kind of a pity's not the right word for it, but you're like, how much did you want to get into this that your entry into it was going to be this character that you knew everyone was going to hate, and you're banking on people being able to separate the character that they're only going to see you in from assuming that you're any different in real life? Doesn't, like, if I came up to you and I was like, hey, you can enter professional wrestling. And I know now that there's more of a knowledge about that to where you know that someone coming in is not really it. Like you said, most of the time it turns out to be where the people that are the baby faces in the ring are the craziest fucking people in real life and have the most like crazy shit and like horrible shit about them. And then vice versa. You always saw like Undertaker as this evil guy and everything like that. But then you learn out Mark Calloway, kind of like a cool, like more normalish dude on the outside and everything.
South Texan. Yeah. He's popping up in the story too.
But what position do you have to be in to be like, yep, I'm now going to hitch my profession to being this like universally hated thing?
I think it's just a part of the wrestling world. And I think this is where, like I was talking about, how it came from that carny kind of background.
Like once you're in it, you're in it. Yeah, you don't see anything else.
Wrestling is just, it's a character. And Fritz, I think, was a fairly decent guy kind of in the beginning. Big family man.
So now we're going to call Jack Fritz, just so we're aware. Okay.
Yeah, so the Atkinson, Jack Atkinson has become Fritz Von Erich. And the Von Erich family is basically just officially born. Speaking of that, a year before his debut, Jack Jr. is born in 1952. So he's a new father that's just debuting into something, and maybe that's what led him into being like, I don't really want to be called Fritz Von Erich, but I kind of need to provide for my family now. I got the wrestling itch. I fell in love with this sport. I need
that's
to do
what I'm saying. There has to be at some point kind of like a more human element than just being like, man, that kind of sucks. Like maybe he wasn't like thrilled to be put into that character.
He definitely could have been, but he played the shit out of it. They were super duper popular. And the only reason that him and Waldo actually broke up as a tag team was because he didn't like traveling the Eastern Seaboard, probably because he had a son now and they were trying to figure that stuff out. Second son, Kevin, born in 1957, followed by the third son, David, in 1958. So he's pumping these kids out pretty hard now. This is sort of where we start to see some odd things going on in the Von Erich family. March 1959, Jack Jr. is in the trailer park that they're living in because they're literally living in a trailer that's being drugged from territory to territory for Fritz to wrestle. Ends up accidentally touching a live wire and falls face first into the snow and drowns at age six. So he drowned on dry land in the snow. And just to think about the kind of sadness and torment that you would have to go through as a father that wasn't paying attention, as a mother that wasn't paying attention, it would have to really start to weigh on you.
Yeah.
But Jack still continued to wrestle.
He knew at that point you had Kevin and David. So there were three boys.
Yep.
Jack Jr. dies. And then a year after he dies, probably, so she would almost have to be close to being pregnant, actually.
Yeah, because
at that point, February 3rd in 1960. So she's either newly pregnant. I might be doing the math wrong here. Sorry. No. Okay. So if you said February and he passed away in March, so it would have been a little bit after that, probably closer to like August or September. But
Jack died, Jack Jr. died March 1959. Carrie's born February 1960.
And that's what I mean. So probably she got pregnant. What I'm saying is that
math wise, what that would be 9 months would be.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm also making the assumption here that they're obviously not really concerned about contraception in this. I don't try to get in the weeds on the characterization on this, but that seems very his mindset to me is that they weren't concerned with having another kid, but man, you just lost a kid. And then 3 months later, now your wife's pregnant and everything. I'm just trying to figure out even from a mindset, this guy's I got another kid now. And just what he's going through.
Yeah. I mean, it's a whirlwind of emotion. They'd settled down in St. Louis at this point. He was just working out of a single territory. He wrestled in St. Louis for a while and he actually helped rebuild the wrestling scene in Japan. Because they had a wrestler that was murdered and it kind of tore apart the Japanese wrestling scene. So Fritz actually went over there, and this is where we get the name Iron Claw, because while Fritz was over there, his patented finisher, the Iron Claw, was actually passed down from a Japanese wrestler. Now you're going to have to give me a little bit of leeway and fantasizing here. The claw is because Fritz's right hand was so strong that when he put it on someone's head, his pinky and his thumb would actually squeeze the blood flow off of the temples, thus rendering these people helpless. The
kind
oxygen
of a
starts to go.
Type situation where you're just catching a
So you'd catch him, you'd put him in the iron
Mr.
claw
Socko situation,
huh?
A Mankind Mr. Socko. What was his move? Where he
mandible
did
claw.
The mandible claw. Yeah.
That's more of a nerve pain, whereas this is just a way to pass somebody out. So Fritz's right hand was so strong that he was able to pass a man out with just
his
hand.
Did he learn it because he was passed down? Do you think it's a pressure point thing? That's the touch of death in Japanese culture, everything like that. It was this move is just was passed down from an ancient Japanese wrestler.
Well, yeah, and I don't know anatomy wise, I mean, I think your temples are pretty important because I know it's like the softest part of your skull. Yeah. And if you get hit there, it's probably night night. So if you can squeeze those hard enough and cut that blood flow off, man, you're going to sleep quick. Mm-hmm. Fritz used this hold basically as his finisher, and it becomes a Von Erich staple. After he finishes up in St. Louis and finishes up in Japan, Von Erich and the family move back down to Texas.
Did he take the family with him to Japan?
No, he was just over on tour.
Man, that's nuts.
Yeah, so he left mom to take care of three boys pretty soon after already losing one boy. Mm-hmm. Like, just a... I think wrestling families probably have to make a lot of sacrifices. And these guys, when we talk about, or when I talk about just like wrestling nowadays, they're on the road quite a bit for house shows as far as like WWE goes. So you could do 200 nights in a year.
Yeah.
These guys were going 300, 320. They were traveling and doing these shows all the time. And that's actually one thing that really plays kind of a crucial role for the Von Erich family as they grow.
It's kind of crazy to see the juxtaposition between when we talked about Andre the Giant. He immediately came in with this following. He's a superstar because he was an oddity and everything like mm-hmm. that. And where, yeah, early on he was probably doing a lot of shows, but then he slowed down and was able to make like a great living as a wrestler, just like being lent out to these shows for like big events and everything like that because he was such a draw. Then you have this guy that is basically like on the fucking bottom. This is just fucking scratching and clawing. It's kind of like that episode of That 70s Show I was thinking about where they go to the wrestling event that's in the high school gym.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the longest time, like we think of wrestling now and think of like you have your top tier, like on, you know, primetime TV, WWE. You have what's the new AEW
is vying for something like that. They lucked out because Shad Khan, the guy that owns the Jaguars, his son Tony is the one that runs it. Nice. So they have billions and billions of dollars.
But then you also had like that exact situation where you had high school gyms were bringing in like these wrestlers just coming through town, just setting up the ring and laying out folding chairs. And then they were gone that night.
Well, they still do it. The independent scene still will put on a wrestling show anywhere.
We've been to micro wrestling.
Yeah, we did do micro wrestling, and it is very similar. But yeah, after they end up down in Texas, Fritz kind of starts to transition. Like the one thing that these guys wanted to do back then when they had families, they wanted to get in a territory where they could rise to the top and become a promoter. Because as a promoter, you can put yourself at the top of the card.
You want
to
get in management.
Yeah, well, you can carry yourself. At the same time, that's where the real money is. Because you're taking all these booking fees.
Cuts off the house and everything like that. The house take and everything. And it makes sense, too, because he probably, when he went over to Japan and was helping to kind of rebuild that scene, he was then learning that skill of how to do promotion. But at the same time, he could see what was working here. And he could see what worked over there and been like, well, I can maybe blend this kind of stuff together for promotion type stuff, kind of hype up different things.
And that's sort of really what he did. Before they moved, fifth son Mike was born in March 1964. Their final son was born 2 years after they moved, Chris, in September 1969. So you have five boys now. You had six children, five boys. These two kind of came a little bit later in life. I mean, I don't know what he was born in 1929. He had a kid in 64. So that would be 35. Then he would have a kid at 39 in 1969, maybe 40 years old. So you have,
again, not too concerned about pulling out or prophylactics or anything like that.
Contraception. They just may not have had condoms
Doris, in the 60s, Texas. The fucking workhorse.
Yeah. And she really was. She's kind of the unintended victim in this whole thing. But growing up, Kevin, David, and Carrie were the super athletes that Fritz was. Kevin played football at North Texas. That's actually, he had so many issues with his knees playing football that that's sort of what led him into wrestling because he had a knee surgery that he just couldn't come back from.
So I can play it in my head too because watching the trailer and everything like that. Can you give me who is playing who?
This is where I think my first gripe, and I can't really say gripe because I haven't seen it yet, but they're casting. Zac Efron is going to be Carrie, the third son. No. He's not going to be the third son. Zac Efron's going to be Kevin. Jeremy Allen White is going to be Carrie. MJF plays a different character. David is a guy that I've never heard of.
Okay.
But Kevin's the first one to break into the business for Fritz.
Yeah, so Zac Efron, Kevin, and Carrie is Jeremy Allen White.
Okay.
Shout out to Bear.
Yeah, Carmy will be playing Kevin. I would have switched those two personally, just because the way that they look, Carrie had a physique that was just chiseled out of granite. And Zac Efron looks like he got stung by a million bees in the right spot now and is just a hunk of man.
Mm-hmm.
He is, what was the guy in Fantastic Four? The Thing?
Yeah.
He is just the Thing now. And that's really what Carrie's physique was. I would see Carmy almost being more of a Kevin just because Kevin was the athlete. Huh?
He's such a Kevin.
He really sort of fits the mold of Kevin. But Kevin was the first son to enter into wrestling. David played football and basketball for North Texas on scholarship as well. So he was kind of like the worker of the family. Like, he was great on the mic. He had a real emotional range when he would do interviews or promos or anything like that. But when he got into the ring, the dude just went. The guy knew how to wrestle. He knew in-ring psychology. He could sell a move like nobody's business. He was the tallest one of the three.
He's like the showman.
Yeah, he really was. Yeah. But he, when the time came, he was ready to strap it in and wrestle. Carrie threw discus at the University of Houston on a track scholarship and actually broke his father's Southwestern Conference record in the discus and ended up getting into wrestling because he wanted to throw in the Olympics, but we had actually boycotted the Olympics that year, so he couldn't go over there and throw, so he joined
the
family.
And there was no
business.
Money in trying to hold off for the next 4 years. And yeah. Just, yeah.
So you have Kevin coming in first, David coming in second, Carrie coming in third. And this was almost something necessary because Fritz's promotion, which was eventually called WCCW World Championship, or World Class Championship Wrestling. The CCs always get me. But it was just the family business. Kevin ends up coming in last, like I say, 1976 for this crop. And as he comes in, Fritz needed new blood. He needed somebody to come in. He needed somebody to just basically strap a rocket to for this promotion and make it all happen. Kevin tells a story that I thought was really, really funny. He said that when he first came into wrestling, he, like, all the women in the crowd would just go nuts for him. And I hadn't really thought about it in these terms, but wrestling back then was a lot of guys in their early 30s and mid 40s that weren't really in shape. They weren't really super hot. There was a few guys that looked good.
It's what you would think of maybe more so in the terms of like what we see as wrestling today, just like the chiseled fucking jack dudes. You still get your guys that almost look like your Andre the Giants, your Big Shows, the guys that are like built for power and
plumbers.
Speed. Yeah.
They look like just everyday working.
The strong man from the circus is what it was.
Yeah. And really that's what it was. So you get this young hotshot Kevin that comes in, and he said that he was super duper shy. And so whenever he would walk out to go to the ring, all these girls and everything would start cheering for him. And they would be running up to the barriers and trying to hold him and trying to hug him and everything like that. And he said that he went to the back after it was like his third show and told his dad that he needed to quit paying these girls to come up and like hug him and fawn over him. He's like, I don't like it, Dad. And Fritz is like, buddy, that's just you. I'm not doing anything. He thought that his dad was bribing the crowd to try to embarrass
him. Putting plants in.
Yeah. But probably the coolest thing about Kevin was he was actually a barefoot wrestler. And he said that the reason that he wrestled barefoot was because he had so many issues with his knee after his surgeries that he actually felt like he had better support and range of movement being barefoot than being trapped in a wrestling boot. Just because it comes up so high, they get floppy, they get heavy.
There's usually somewhat of a heel on some of them, right?
Some of them for a little bit of height, but they're just, they weren't comfortable for him. So he actually wrestled his entire career barefoot, which is something that Polynesian wrestlers had been doing for a little while. Jimmy Snuka, who was actually in WCCW with them, wrestled barefoot. He started out in boots, and then as he kind of more embraced his Polynesian roots, he went barefoot as well. But just kind of an interesting thing, almost like a throwback to old Greek wrestling where you were doing it naked, but he was just doing it barefoot. So we had David that came in second. Like I say, David was the wrestler's wrestler. He was kind of the cream of the crop. Him and his dad didn't really see eye to eye on a lot of things, which made it more so. So David would try to branch out. He wrestled in Florida territories. He kind of wrestled all over the South. And it only made him a better wrestler because Fritz was training him. Mm-hmm. Fritz was the guy that was on the ground with him. And Fritz was a good wrestler in his own right.
There's this show. I haven't watched it, but I've heard people talk about it and I've seen trailers for it. It's called Heels.
Yep. Stephen Amell.
Yeah. Does that kind of, and then that Alexander von Ludwig or whatever his name is, playing brothers and everything, does that kind of pull some stuff from this because of like it's in the Texas territory, it seems like it's in the South, it seems like it's got a lot of similarities. I don't see how like it can't draw from this.
There's a lot of just wrestling lore and things that are drawn from WCCW, and actually it was sort of like a rip, like WWE was WWF back then, it was owned by Vince Sr. and WCCW, Fritz was able to get in really well down in Texas with a Christian TV network.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually were the first ones to air
odd
it.
Odd pairing.
Yeah. Well, he was going to be a good Christian man. We've put this Nazi sympathizer Von mm-hmm. Erich kind of in the rearview mirror because when he showed up in Texas, he was a Texas boy that had turned face, basically. Yeah. He had turned baby face.
Oh, okay. Because he was also running his own promotion at that point. So he could
book himself how he wanted
to. Gotcha, okay.
So the Von Erich family was just beloved. But because they got this deal, they were the first wrestling company to ever put cameras in the ring and to like mic up the ring.
Oh, really?
So they were going for production value on this like nobody ever had before. And you can actually still see Peacock has the WWE network. They bought the entire WCCW catalog. So you can go back and watch old wrestling matches from the 70s and 80s. Probably not the 70s for WCCW. But just to see the stark difference between an AWA match and how it was filmed, because they just didn't have what Fritz had with the backing of a major Christian network.
Okay.
It also sort of simulcast them out to a lot of other places because it was a Christian network that would do outreach in other places. So this was not really nationally seen.
It's like Christian rock. Like some of it's like, yeah, this is basically like trying to get as hardcore Christian as you can. Like it's wrestling, but it's Christian.
Yeah. And so it kind of gave these guys a starting point that nobody had really seen before.
Well, they were celebrities as much as you could be within like not even a local scene, but like you were saying, like a large like portion of Texas, they started building this celebrity.
So Kerry comes in 1978. Like I said, Kerry is a very handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
He's built just like a Greek god. The guy is chiseled. He's an athlete. Like I said, Kevin was more the athlete. He was kind of more of the charismatic. Like you could tell everything that he was thinking by his body movements. Okay. Like he was just, when he'd flex, the women would go crazy.
Are you talking about Kerry or Kevin? Because he keeps switching.
Kerry. Kevin was the athlete. Kevin was the guy that could move in the ring.
Okay, you're going to have to differentiate because these names are blended into each other.
When I say they were the Beatles of Texas, they couldn't go anywhere anymore really without women just absolutely fawning and loving over them. I saw a video of them in the mall where you just have all these teenage girls, 20s, 30s, mothers that would just flock them in the malls. And because Fritz had kind of had this coming to Jesus moment, he was a born again Christian. He mm-hmm. got in good with them. They were treated almost as like the purity that was the Jonas dream Brothers. Of Texas. Yeah, sort of, in mm-hmm. a way. But you had that good old country boy, their farm kids, they love God, and they were just seen as very pure, which is very odd for the way that they lived their life outside the ring. There was a match that I watched in WCCW of Kevin. When Kevin comes to the ring, the girls had actually rushed the barricade so hard that they were reaching into the ring to get signatures from him until security had to pull all these girls back. When they would walk through the crowd for their entrances, girls would just grab them and kiss them on the cheek. They would hug them. Like it was just incredible how much everybody loved him. And you have Fritz, who's their father, who got all of these men into this wrestling organization in Texas. So you're getting love from everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. David was, when I said that he was the guy that was the in-ring guy, he just absolutely blew up. He was a single star. They would wrestle together. He would come in and out of WCCW because him and Fritz would have an argument. He'd go to a different territory. He'd wrestle. He'd pick up some good tips. He'd come back. And WCCW is a part of something that's still around today somehow, but it's called the NWA. It's the National Wrestling Alliance. Mm-hmm. So you would have all these promotions that would have their own belt system, but then you would have the governing body of NWA over the top, and they would have, oh boy, I just had
an epiphany.
Who's the rap group?
NWA.
Yeah. I just had one of those. I just saw Ice Cube when I said that in my head.
Okay.
But these aren't people with attitude. These are the Wrestling Alliance. But the NWA heavyweight title was the crown of,
it was the cream of the wrestling. Crop.
Yeah, it was the cream of the crop at that point. And Fritz's actual last match in St. Louis was for the NWA title, and mm-hmm. he ended up losing. And so Fritz had never captured this. This was something that was really, really big. And when you would choose a new champion, it would actually be all these different promotions inside the NWA that would meet and talk about who they wanted to.
Of course, he didn't capture it because of the character he was playing at that time. No one wants a Nazi champ, the NWA.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that probably was pretty accurate. But at the time, Ric Flair, a guy who's still somehow alive today, was the NWA champion. And he held the NWA champion for a majority of the 80s. Like, the man traveled everywhere. But David was supposed to be the next guy up. They had all gotten together. They had decided that David was going to take the belt off of Ric. Before that happens, David ships off to Japan to do a tour with All Japan Wrestling, which was, probably their biggest promotion at the time. He has the Von Erich name. The Von Erich name is known in Japan. They wanted to kind of go get him basically tuned up to come back and win the biggest crown in mm-hmm. wrestling at that point.
He's coming in out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He's coming from Japan.
They had, kind of started a feud before he had left. They had pre-taped a few different interviews that they were releasing while David was supposed to
be
gone. Are
these available? Just curious.
Some of them are. You can find some of them on YouTube. And David, like I say, he was a talker. He knew how to really get this thing started and going. February 10th, 1984, they had roll call down in the hotel, and everybody showed up to go to the show except for David. They went up to his room, and a guy named Bruiser Brody, who later on, not in this story, but later on is stabbed to death in a shower during a wrestling
event.
Yeah. By one of the promoters that was never charged with his murder.
Jesus.
That's what
I'm saying. I've had this conversation with yeah. you so often that like, it's like in a lot of situations, they have the storylines that you would think would be just the craziest shit with pro wrestling. They're not the craziest shit. It's the actual events that are going on.
Yeah, it's almost more tame in between the ropes. But Brody breaks into the room up there, and he finds David dead on the floor in a way that was basically looking like he was trying to get to his phone and call. Now, whenever you see a wrestler pass away and they say that he passed away in his hotel room, it's kind of code for an overdose,
mm-hmm.
Which there is some questionable things that come out of David's passing. He was eventually, the coroner over in Japan said that he had acute enteritis, which is an inflammation of the lower bowel,
mm-hmm.
and it basically starts bleeding, and then it fills your body cavity yeah. full of blood. The Von Erichs say that before he had actually left to go to Japan, he was having issues where he was throwing up blood, and so they kind of think that it could have been that. But Fritz was a real stickler on if you make commitments, you have to go. So he ended up going to Japan still. There's other stories that when Brody came in and found him dead, Brody had grabbed all the pills and everything off of his nightstand and thrown them away beforehand.
It's not to say it couldn't have been a combination, because if he's trying to take pain medication and shit like that,
yeah,
for the condition, because I'm telling you right now, if you're throwing a blood and you're bleeding internally, there's going to be pain doing this shit. Like anything, just probably just walking around like normal day to day.
And just being on the schedule that they were, you have to be able to go the next night, no matter what. Rumors of a heart attack and kind of something weird out there. They said some people have questioned if he had bulimia or not, just because he did have two very in shape brothers, and David was a little bit more on the thick boy side. And so they think that he could have had an eating disorder that would have led to bulimia that would have eventually ended him. When they got him back to America, they did his funeral, and there were so many people that showed up at the church. They said that it, and these are all wrestling numbers, so they're going to be inflated no matter the sad situation that it's in. But they said about 3,000 to 5,000 people showed up to the church.
Jesus.
Enough so that they had to actually set up speakers outside the church so people could sit there and listen. Like, it was that big of a deal. He dies February 10th, 1984. May 6th, 1984, they have a tribute show called the David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions. David Von Erich was known as Yellow Rose of Texas. That was like his nickname, his moniker. So the main event of that night, this is actually, Fritz had actually gone into retirement. Fritz came out of retirement for one more match. Kevin, I believe, fought a guy named Gino Hernandez. Gino Hernandez, also following along the wrestling lines and not a part of this story, was found dead in his house in Texas eventually in his lifetime. And they don't know if it was an overdose, but the weird thing was they found four times the lethal amount of cocaine inside of his body. They also found it in his stomach, though. And if you know anything about cocaine, that's usually not something that you eat. So they think that there could be some weird things then. These are all episodes that if anybody else is interested in wrestling, I mean, I would love to do them just because they're all pretty crazy. But at this event, the main event, it was held at Texas Stadium, so University of Texas, held 45,000 people that showed up there. And again, wrestling numbers, so this could be anywhere from 30 to 45,000. I watched it. There's a fucking lot of people there. Main event, you're looking at Ric Flair against Kerry Von Erich for the NWA title. And
so the brother fills in the storyline, essentially. That's so crazy that they're just like, we're just going to throw the brother in the storyline.
One, not to mention that, but February to May, what, that's 3 months that they ended up David dying, and then they run this big, massive event. Yeah. Like, the amount of time to the
show
must back,
go. It's like the epitome of the show must go on.
And
the
show must go on. That's really what it was. Kerry ends up beating Ric Flair via backslide, which is a move that nobody's won a match with in the last 25 years. But in doing so, it made Rick still look okay, because it was just, he got tricked and rolled up and got pinned. This was a big moment for the Von Erich family. This was something that Fritz never got to do, something that David was slated to do, and Kerry did it. It lasted 18 days before Kerry gave the belt back to Rick in a match in Japan. The reason that they did it was because, as David was such a good worker and such like a good student of the game and always fulfilled his requirements, Kerry was a little bit more loosey-goosey on engagements. And to be the NWA champion, you're going to be on the road wrestling 5-6 nights a week. And Kerry probably
gotta
wasn't going to be able,
you got to be able to show
to keep up that kind of pace, because he's a little bit more nonchalant about showing up for bookings. So Rick gives that back.
Or Kerry gives it back.
Kerry gives it back to Rick, yeah. Going back to WCCW, you just lost basically one of your main draws. You lost to Von Erich. What do you do at that point? Fritz isn't coming back out of retirement.
There seemed to be a plethora of other Von Erichs that can step in.
And that's what they did. Mike, the next brother in line, debuted November 1983. So he's coming up. This was before David had died, but then he's elevated to this trio. And this trio of Von Erichs that wrestled kind of one of their main crowning achievements was they had this feud with the Fabulous Freebirds. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar?
Also three. No, but also three, I'm guessing.
Also okay. three. Michael P.S. Hayes, Bam Bam, Gordy. Oh, it'll come to me.
I think Bam Bam Gordy is probably specifically enough.
Why am I fucking blanking on these guys? I love these guys. But the Freebirds, like you say, were a trio. So when the Freebirds came, they came from the Georgia territory. And there was this little divide between, like, these guys coming out to this rock music. Michael Hayes, Buddy Roberts, and Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
Okay, it was worth, actually. Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
So
listen here, Terry Gordy.
They show up with this Georgia attitude. They're coming out to rock music.
Boo!
I want to say Bad Company was the one that did their theme song.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So this was like the first time that rock music had ever really been introduced.
Bad Company did their theme song, or they used a Bad Company song for their theme song?
I haven't listened to the whole Bad Company.
One's going to be more badass than the other, but still a good choice. But if Bad Company actually made the come out music, that's fucking awesome.
Well, Carrie would come out to Rush, Tom Sawyer.
Mm.
So these guys were coming out to just some real bangers.
Maybe a little nod to the Canadian roots.
A little bit, yeah. But you have this feud that goes on all throughout the 80s, and it's good versus evil. It's these good Christian boys that are holding back the evil of the Fabulous Freebirds with their rock and roll.
That's what I was going to say.
And their laissez-faire lifestyle. But it was just something that really kind of set the mood for the Von Erichs as far as this good lifestyle. And you already have a brother that may have died of an overdose mm-hmm. on the outside. So Mike steps into that trio position. He's just David's replacement. He actually ended up wrestling up until 1985 when he was over in Israel, which again, go with me on this one because it seems odd. The Von Erichs, the name comes from a German sympathizer. They were wrestling in Israel as faces. Does it seem odd for the country of Israel to be cheering for former German sympathizers?
Yeah, I well, that's the thing is that you got to separate those characters. Maybe he'd done such a good job as distancing themselves. The other thing, too, so what you're saying here, so Mike, at this point, he wrestled up until 85.
Yeah.
So he only wrestled for, like, he was 21 when he stopped.
Well, there's a reason why. So while they're over in Israel, Mike gets his shoulder pulled out of a socket. Like, full-on dislocation, completely out of it. Has surgery over
during
in Israel.
During a match.
Yeah, during a match.
Okay.
So has surgery over in Israel. He undergoes surgery August 22nd, 1985, and is released from the hospital, brought back to America. He develops a staph infection while he is out and goes into what's called toxic shock syndrome. He had a temperature of 107 degrees.
That'll fucking cook your... Oh, yeah, you have it. Like, I saw the temperature, and I was like, that'll cook your brain, and then you just had it noted, had cooked his brain. Yeah.
So for our European listeners, or actually probably anybody outside of America, 42 degrees Celsius. It's pretty fucking hot. And they thought that Mike was gone. They thought that he was going to die. They brought the family into the hospital room and just said, say your goodbyes. He's not going to live. Somehow he miraculously ends up pulling through. And he just, by a stroke of luck, Kevin said in an interview that as they were telling him goodbye, they had one last prayer. And after they finished the prayer, the doctor came in and said that his temperature was going down and he was looking like he might have been able to pull through. Mike came back and did an interview that was really sort of odd. Like, you could tell as he was talking, something was wrong with mm-hmm. him. Like, it really didn't feel right what was happening. The first sort of issue that the Von Erichs run into with the family is while Mike is out dealing with toxic shock, being sick, trying mm-hmm. to come back from all that, they introduce somebody named Lance Von Erich.
I'm looking back at the list of children. Do we have a Lance?
We don't have a Lance.
Okay.
Because Lance was actually, I think his name was Lance Vaughn was his real name, but he was introduced as basically a Von Erich cousin.
Okay.
That was the son of Waldo, his former partner.
Oh, yeah.
And the fans grew up knowing all of the Von Erich kids. They knew all the Von Erich family. And so it was almost like a disrespectful slap in the face where they're like, we don't like Lance. We don't know Lance. Lance isn't a part of your family. You're just trying to make us sound or make us feel dumb, basically, by just introducing this new Von Erich. And Kevin
fucking
and Carrie,
Lance.
Yeah, Kevin and Carrie were like, fuck this idea. We don't want a new brother. We don't need Lance. And Fritz said, you guys are wrestling every single day. We have to have a third Von Erich in there.
We have to have a steady supply line of these Von Erichs.
Yeah,
to keep.
We have to basically have somebody, if you're running a show in one place, Carrie's running a show in another
there
place.
There has to be, it's like there has to be a Von Erich.
Mm-hmm. We got used to working out this trio, so we need Lance in there. Well, Lance sort of has a falling out when it comes time for a new payday, for a new contract. He's like, hey, I'm playing a Von Erich. You basically owe me more money. You gave me this moniker. I need to be paid better. Fritz tells him to pound sand, and Lance leaves. Well, when Lance leaves, he's wrestling in another promotion as Lance Von Erich, which is obviously a name that he can't take outside the promotion because it's owned by WCCW. And Fritz comes out for an interview and basically he's like, we don't know Lance. Lance is not a part of this anymore. Lance Von Erich is not a real person. Like, basically just shits on this dude for trying to steal the moniker that he helped
him create. So fully almost like breaks character.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Mike comes back. Mike is back to wrestling a little bit. He actually...
Just from a cognition standpoint and everything, like, was it pretty evident that he just wasn't there?
Yeah, he just really wasn't with it. And it's just such a bummer to watch because his last match was April 3rd, 1987. And in between April 3rd, 1987, I believe it was like April 8th, he actually got pulled over for a DUI, which was very, very embarrassing for a Von Erich.
Oh, yeah.
Caught up in something like that, a good Christian believing family and all that kind of stuff. April 12th, Mike left a note for the family. He drove up to a place called Louisville Lake and he overdosed on alcohol and sleeping pills. They took a little while to find him. Kevin and his mom were actually the two people that found him, which is, again, just another eerie part of this story that they kind of are the ones that come across this stuff. So you lose Jack Jr. through a freak accident.
Mm-hmm.
You lose David to a possible enteritis, possible overdose.
3 years before, a little over 3 years before.
Yeah. So these things just keep stacking up for him. It's really sort of a tough thing to try to continue on through, but they just kept doing it. And
this is literally, you should just tell this, the show must go on.
Yeah. But like we say, we need that Von Erich trio.
Yeah.
And the Von Erich trio is going to look to its youngest member, Chris. And for as much as Mike wanted to be a wrestler, he just didn't have the physique and the body and the athleticism that David, Carrie, and Kevin had. So he was an okay wrestler, but he just didn't look the Von Erich part.
Yeah.
Like, there was just really, he was a Von Erich in name, he was a Von Erich in blood, but when he crossed those ropes, he just didn't have it. And Chris was the ultimate kind of like, he's a Von Erich by blood, but he was the shortest by far, enough so that he looked almost like a miniature version. I want to say that he was like 5'5", maybe.
Ooh.
So not very tall. This was all due to him having asthma.
Not to say this in like a morbid way or anything, but like they're literally now at the bottom of the barrel of the Von Erichs.
We've run through the Von Erich lineage and we're at the last stop. Chris, through having asthma as a kid, had his grunts or his growth stunted and actually had basically like weaker bones because this
like asthma, a brittle
medication
bone syndrome type thing
that he had taken as a kid. But he had always grown up idolizing his brothers. He grew up idolizing his dad.
That's a weird thing to think about, though, is like, like, I'm not saying, like, from a physicality standpoint, everything. It sounds like this was always the intention of the father being so fucking, like, this is the family business. You're going to fucking do this. Of not being like, okay, everyone's got to train and get up to speed on what we're doing because you're going to be around it. But at a certain point, when you get to, like, you were talking about with Mike not being as physically imposing as his brothers, not being the showman that his brothers were, anything like that. First of all, that's a lot of pressure when you're just like, hey, you're next up, and you're filling the role now of David, who was essentially like the top tier.
Yeah.
And yep. So you have almost an imposter syndrome. You feel forced into doing that. At what point were the kids looking at the toll this had taken on their family and been like, maybe this isn't like, and it's not like they had a choice, of course, because at that point, you know, that the culture of that era and everything like that, and especially the way that the family was probably structured and ran, it was Fritz calling the shots. You weren't going to, there was nothing outside of this for you.
Yeah, it was the family business. Chris, before he started training to wrestle, was running cameras for WCCW. Mm-hmm. Like he was.
And he's like, I like this fucking aspect of it.
Yeah. And he wanted to be just like his brothers, and that included going into the ring. Kerry just took it upon himself to train Chris. They were in the gym all the time. The guy that was sculpted from granite was basically in charge of making sure that Chris was up to snuff. He was a pretty big little dude. Like he was pretty yoked out. But he just had the issue with his brittle bones that any sort of match that he would go into, there was always going to be a potential issue for him. He broke both arms a couple times.
Are we under the understanding of this, that there's going to be a lot of steroid use within this family in order to maintain these physiques, to maintain this mystique and everything?
Kerry, yes, I really believe so, just because towards the end of his career, he just looked so bloated that it was, you could tell that it definitely wasn't all him anymore.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that, which is something that, for as weird as this story is, when we get to Kerry, I don't know how you're going to believe me.
Okay.
It's just nuts. But Chris ends up breaking his arm multiple times, broke his jaw. There was a point in time where I think he fell down onto the apron and broke both arms.
Because this is at a time also within wrestling where there's not as much, I guess, stagecraft as far as like learning how to take bumps, take falls without injuring yourself. That there's that priority on longevity. You're still trying to sell this in a way that you have to put enough actual execution of this kind of stuff in where you're physically hurting yourself.
Yeah.
For the show.
He had these brittle bones already. So what was going to happen was just basically going to happen to him. I believe it would have been September 11th, 1991. Kevin recalls kind of the story of how it goes in an interview and says that he got a call from Chris right around 12:30 and was like, hey, you have my VCR. I need it back. And Kevin's like, can we just handle this in the morning, man? We got a long day tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I need to get some sleep. I'll get you the VCR back first thing in the morning. And he said that Chris got a little crazy. He actually heard Chris's four-wheeler circling his house that night.
Mm-hmm. Were they all living on kind of like a family compound type thing?
They said that the furthest anybody lived away from Fritz's compound was like a mile.
Okay.
So they were all pretty in close range.
Yeah, yeah.
September 12th, Kevin's looking for Chris after they had this weird interaction the night before, ends up seeing him sitting on top of a hill, goes up, talks to Chris, asks Chris what he's doing up there. And Chris seems like he's kind of in a manic state. Kevin makes a statement to him. He goes, you're not going to kill yourself, are you? Chris looks at him. He goes, no, I'm not going to kill myself. Kevin goes back down to the house, leaves him alone for some reason that I'm sure he questions to himself every single day. When he makes it back down to the house, he tells Fritz what was going on. They find a note that Chris had left in the house. Fritz is like, what are you doing here? You need to go back up there. By the time Kevin made it back up to the hill, he had found Chris down. He'd taken his life, shot himself with a 9mm. Through the thinking spot.
Fuck.
Yeah. So all you have left out of all these children are Kerry and Kevin. Those are the final two that are remaining, the final two standing. There's some shakeup in 1986, as far as how WCCW goes, they actually break away from the NWA and just kind of go independent for a while. There becomes a merger with something called the Continental Wrestling Association, the CWA. It was based out of Memphis. They formed something called the USWA. The other partner that was involved in this was a gentleman named Jerry Jarrett. If you are familiar with Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
Yep.
That would be his father. The guy that
bashes guitars over everyone.
Yep. So it's just such a generation removed. Actually, I guess it would be two now. But these guys' dads were pushing their kids into this, and they wrestled for so long that they're still around doing it today. Some other people that went through WCCW, The Undertaker was actually, I believe he was called the Red Texas Devil when he fought down there. Stone Cold Steve Austin stopped through. He was actually trained by one of the WCCW guys. His name was a gentleman, Chris Adams. So you have this lineage of anybody that was a Texas-born wrestler was coming through WCCW at the time, and that's where they were cutting their teeth.
Fritz was leaving his stamp
on
all these. Okay.
Just incredible how many people went through there, how many people wrestled in the territory. Sort of what led up to WCCW going independent was WWF was kind of starting to break the unwritten rule of territory wrestling, and they were starting to travel. They were starting to move around to these different territories and do their own WWF shows. Vince Sr. had approached, I believe it would have been Vince Sr. still at this point, approached Fritz and said, "Hey, I want to come down to Texas. I want to run shows down here. I need you to be a partner in this. You have all of these different outlets that you have.
You have the infrastructure. You have the Texas territory."
And they had this place that they ran shows out of called the Sportatorium, which doubled as basically like a cattle bidding arena.
Oh, hell yeah.
But it was set up
like a livestock or, yeah.
Yeah, like a livestock auction, exactly. So didn't have any air conditioning or anything inside, but it was where they were doing these big, highly produced shows from that were going everywhere. Vince is like, "I would like to bring you in on my business." And Fritz is like, "No, dude, this is our territory. Mm-hmm. You can't come in and do this." He's like, "I'll cut you in 50-50 partners." Fritz tells him to fuck himself, which I think sort of leads to some things that happen later on. But yeah, WCCW really is no more at this point. It's the USWA, the United States Wrestling Alliance.
So they basically were joining together as a form of like support and survival.
Yeah.
Because they realized that there was a larger entity coming and it was a strength in numbers type thing.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it only lasted 4 years. 1990, they broke back away, ran a couple more shows and had to close down operations because they just couldn't have the operating funds anymore because WCCW had done things like bring in Lance Von Erich. They had seen basically the entire Von Erich offspring run into these issues and have these
troubles. Main draw for it was running dry. The well was running dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really got tough and business got tough for Fritz. He had actually sold his way out of it when they had formed the USWA. So Kevin and Kerry were the two that were actually in business with Jerry Jarrett at the time.
Okay, so they were wrestling essentially under somebody else.
Yeah, they were wrestling under somebody else, but they still had ownership in the company.
Yeah, I don't know why for a second that I thought that because they weren't wrestling for like their father's promotion or that wasn't functioning anymore that they would just stop wrestling. No, that's not how it worked. That was their profession and their livelihood, so they were moving on to do that somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is where things get odd that I was talking about earlier. June 4th, 1986, Kerry's involved in a motorcycle accident that ended with him running into the back of a parked police car. He was wearing, like, shorts, like, short 80s shorts.
Appropriate for the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And ended up smashing his right leg almost completely. Like, it just got crushed under the weight. I don't know if it was the bike. I don't know if
between
it was
the
how
two of them or something like
that. Yeah, something like that. They do end up saving the leg. They take other muscles and shit off of his body and kind of rebuild his leg. Like, they'll trim some muscle somewhere else and kind of reattach some things. They were concerned because the foot was like a full reconstruction.
Yeah.
And they said, "I think you'd be good. I think you'd be able to keep everything." One night in the hospital, Carrie was so doped up that he got up out of his bed and started trying to walk and re-injured his foot, and they ended up having to amputate his right foot. Now, this is 1986 is when he gets his right foot amputated, and they kept this a secret basically until the end of his life. Now, how would you say that they would be able to keep a man with a right foot missing?
Was he the one that used to barefoot wrestle too?
No, that was Kevin.
Okay.
So Carrie actually, in order to keep up the illusion that he still had his right foot, would shower in his wrestling boots after a match. Like, he would be in the showers in the locker room, and he would be butt-ass naked, but his wrestling boots.
Okay.
He would show up to events already dressed and everything and ready to go. But
hold on a second. So, like, he had essentially just at the bottom of the boot. Because, again, this is, like, you know, probably the, what you say, the 80s?
Yeah.
So, at this point in the 80s, I'm sorry, but, like, I'm not up to date on the full gambit of prosthetic advancement. But to have the foot had to obviously be filled in the bottom of the boot. And then had to somehow strap to his calf and his leg enough to hold the whole thing on while also being able to pivot and do wrestling moves. That's fucking nuts.
Yeah, that's how good of a wrestler he was. That's how athletic of a freak he was. The fact that he had a prosthetic inside of his boot and then his boot strapped to his nub, and he was still able to keep up this illusion, except for one time. And this one time, they said that there's video footage out there. I'm not the only one that's looked for a long time for it because I really wanted to see it. But they say that it exists. Nobody's ever seen it before. So really all they can go on is what happened that night.
And like live accounts.
Yeah. So November 12th, 1988, this is 2 years after this happened. Carrie's wrestling an AWA match, American Wrestling Alliance, against a guy named Colonel DeBeers.
Hell yeah.
Colonel DeBeers goes to pull him down to wrap his legs around the ring post and pulls on his right boot and pulls the boot off of his leg or off of his nub. And Carrie, in a panic, looks down, sees that his foot's not on anymore, scoots out of the ring, punches DeBeers, grabs his wrestling boot, puts his feet underneath the ring apron, reattaches the foot that had just come off. Imagine being a fan and watching this.
I'm thinking of the collective gasp.
Yeah.
But I'm also trying to put my mind in fucking Colonel DeBeer's head where you
pull
literally
his foot off?
Yeah. You're just like, what the fuck? Like, because first, if it moved a certain way, you're like, I just broke this guy's fucking ankle.
Oh, yeah.
But then for it to all come off, if it was all in one motion, you had to think for a split second that you just ripped this guy's. Like, you look down and you see the nub. Yeah, you don't see blood, but you see there's a fucking foot missing. You've got to think for a second, I just ripped this fucking guy's foot off.
Yeah.
Like the panic. And then for the crowd that's close enough to see what's going on, just the.
Yeah. So Carrie retrieves his foot, sticks his feet underneath the ring apron, sticks his leg underneath there, reattaches his foot, comes back out, finishes up the match.
Jesus.
Just that kind of a guy.
To a dead silent house of people just trying to mentally process what they just fucking saw.
Yeah. Just an absolutely incredible thing.
Can you imagine running into some old man? He's like, I was there that day.
I watched Carrie Von Erich's foot come off.
Yeah.
So after that, you have the WWF finally comes calling for Carrie. 1990 is when he signs. This is a pretty big deal because, again, we don't have the WCCW anymore. So Carrie is finally called up to the big leagues. He's the guy that WWF, out of him and Kevin, they believe that Carrie has the body. He's got the looks. He's got the wrestling acumen. Watching old matches of his now, all I see myself doing is just staring at his right boot.
I was going to say it would be very hard not to be like, I got to spot this shit.
You can see just looking at it that his right boot is just a little bit thicker than his left boot. Mm-hmm. So you can tell that there's a little bit of difference. But other than that, he's still moving really,
really
well.
I just see you
really
getting
well.
So close to your fucking TV with remote pause.
Uh-huh.
Pause, like frame by frame, be like, I see it.
Yeah, I was back into the left.
Got you, motherfucker.
I was back into the left last night like 10 times. When he comes in, they don't call him Carrie Von Erich anymore.
Of course not.
WWF is always so concerned about owning the IP for their guys that they can't give him that name because that name's already been trademarked. So they call him the Texas Tornado. They also tell him that the claw that his family has made famous, that literally every Von Erich that's ever wrestled used, they told him that that wasn't his finisher anymore. So he comes up with his new finisher that he had used a few times back in the day. It was the discus punch.
Okay.
Which, again, he holds that discus record.
Is a discus motion with a fist clenched and then he spins up and punches him?
Yep. He gives one full rotation like you would to throw a discus, delivers the punch, drops him. Part of the reason that I personally think that he gets rebranded as the Texas Tornado, I don't necessarily think it's the Von Erich name as far as everybody that's passed away and just kind of the sadness with it.
Yeah.
I think Vince,
like a curse.
Yeah. I think Vince probably still had a little bit of an axe to grind with Fritz telling him that he didn't want.
He's like, I'm going to end the lineage.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that wrestling family, that wrestling name is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And as far as the ring announcers would go, they would actually call him Kerry Von Erich. So they would talk about, Kerry Von Erich coming to the WWF. This man has nothing left to prove. He's wrestled for so many years. Mm-hmm. When they would talk about him, they would actually give him his due, but he would always just be called Texas Tornado. That's what he was introduced as, all that kind of stuff. They didn't, I think, have the rights to the Rush song anymore, so he would come out to a different different song. But he comes in and has a pretty decent amount of success. He was actually a replacement for a guy named Brutus the Barber Beefcake. I only bring this up because Brutus the Barber Beefcake had to be replaced because he had had a boating accident like the week before.
Nice.
So a professional wrestler has some sort of a boating accident that stops him from being able to wrestle. But he shows up at SummerSlam in 1990, like months after he had been signed and come in and won the Intercontinental title, which is the second highest title in WWF, from a guy named Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. Now, Brutus and Kurt, Kurt died of a heart attack from steroids. Brutus also met a very similar fate himself. So these guys that still should be around just aren't around because of the sacrifices
Starting to think in my head, I'm trying to process, like, you know how you can look into certain professions and see, like, the mortality rate and, like, based on their danger and everything? Like, in the, depending on the era and the decade, like, what was the mortality rate like for, like, the mainstream wrestlers? Because you hear about that shit like all the fucking time.
Yeah, there's very few of them that are still around. Somehow Ric Flair, the limousine riding, cute girl kissing, just that guy who's been through two plane crashes in his life, survived both of them, is somehow still alive. But it's also because his physique was that of a common man. He wasn't a steroids guy. He wasn't a guy. He put his body through hell, but
it was more about the persona than the actual package.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he didn't have to worry about too much physical upkeep. But things started to get a little bit rougher for the Texas Tornado in WWF. Through his foot issues and his leg issues, he became pretty addicted to drugs. He became pretty addicted to opiates.
Here's the thing. At this point now, like with this profession, that feels like that's just the natural progression, unfortunately.
Kind of commonplace, yeah. So he had already been caught with prescription drugs that weren't his once. He ends up getting caught again a little bit later. But in 1991, he really sees his stock in WWF diminish. He kind of gets turned into more of the guy that goes out, not enhancement talent for guys that they're building up as far as like to have a good match and beat and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was getting beat some matches in like 2 minutes, like very, very quickly.
He was a real opening act.
Yeah.
Is what you would say. He was out there while people were still getting into their seats, getting concessions, that kind of shit. Okay.
He ends up getting relegated to what are called house shows, which are like the traveling shows that don't get filmed, just basically like for crowd entertainment.
That never further the storyline,
because
then people tuning into the shows are like, the fuck happened? I
have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Back to basically what it used to be.
Yeah.
Like regional type stuff that really wasn't even seen by people outside of that general area.
Just the local act. Yep. He took a 2-month absence in, I believe it was 1992. To deal with a real divorce that happened that was just very, very ugly in his real life. It was probably something that just sort of led to what was coming. He returned to the WWF after those 2 months. He ended up leaving the WWF in August 1992. He wrestled his last match February 12th, 1993 in Dallas for a company called GWF. And they actually did it in the Sportatorium. So WCCW's arena.
Still had that livestock smell.
Yeah, and I'm sure it was probably a pretty big deal to see Kerry Von Erich come back to the Sportatorium again. As the just terribly sad theme through this whole entire episode goes, Kerry, February 18th, this was right after he had gotten that second pop for getting caught with prescription pills. Mm-hmm. Second one was going to be a felony. The day that he was supposed to be indicted and brought into court was February 18th. Drives back to Fritz's farm, goes inside, hugs him, kisses him, tells him he loves him, grabs the .44 caliber gun that he had actually given to Fritz as a birthday present, walks out into the woods, and shoots himself in the heart. Kevin had talked to him kind of earlier that day and realized that he was sort of in distress. He had made mention of wanting to be with his brothers again. Mm-hmm. And Kevin just basically told him not to do anything rash. He said, we'll figure this out. I'm still here. I'm still your brother.
And at this point too, cause we haven't really talked about Kevin and everything, cause we've passed a pretty significant board. So is Kevin still wrestling at this point, just as a smaller act and everything?
Yep. He's more traveling the territories. He didn't get called up to WWF.
Okay.
That's sort of where I feel a little bit bummed out for Kevin, is he really was a good wrestler. But he just sort of didn't have that special.
He was factor. Content. It sounded like these guys wanted to try to like reach the top and sacrifice, get to the top. And I'm not saying it's not a sacrifice what Kevin was doing. What I'm saying is maybe he was just like, this is what I like doing.
Yeah.
I like traveling around to these. I don't want to have to. And it goes back. I think we talked in the first part of this. The reason he wasn't bumped up earlier on because of the reliability thing.
No, that was Kerry.
Oh, that was Kerry.
Yeah. Okay. But the issue for Kevin was David was a talker. David could get you enthralled when he was on the mic.
Gotcha.
Kerry was visually stunning.
He just was. He wasn't either of those.
Yeah, things. He didn't quite have either one of those. He was good in the ring, but as far as any sort of charisma or anything like that, he just didn't really have
he
it.
He was
in him.
Like a journeyman wrestler, yeah. Basically. Okay.
So yeah, again, Kevin tells him, he says, hey man, why don't we try to test our manhood? He goes, you, me, we'll grab our guns. You and I will head up to Alaska and we'll go face down a polar bear. We'll go face down a polar bear. We'll see if we're really meant for this world by going up there and shooting a polar bear. And he said that he really believed in telling Kerry that if he could get him up to Alaska and he could get him away from the drugs, the mm-hmm. people that he was running with, that he could save his life. He was just too late. He ends up showing up at the ranch.
This is actually what he tells him. They're going to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's actually what he said. He said, we're going to go up there with our pistols and we're going to find ourselves a bear and we're going to see if we're going to live or die, if we're meant to be here or not. Shows up at the ranch, asks Fritz where Kerry is. He said he didn't know where he was. He kind of pointed towards the woods. Kevin goes over and finds yet another brother passed of a gunshot wound. Like, just an incredibly just sad life to live. It took 4 years after that. Fritz had, I believe it was liver cancer that had metastasized and spread to his brain. So Fritz ends up passing away September 10th, 1997. The whole Von Erich family, posthumously, all with the exception of Kevin, was inducted into the WWF Hall of Fame in 2009. WWE Hall of Fame, I guess, at that time. Kind of a cool thing to do.
So he's 33 when he kills himself, though.
Yeah. So that's...
It's just young.
Yeah, everybody's young. Everybody's got their life ahead of them, but none of them can kind of look past the forest for the trees mm-hmm. or however that goes. But to be put in the Hall of Fame is probably pretty cool. It was kind of a nice little, hey, you guys contributed a massive amount to wrestling. This is something that was very cool. You would think that would probably be where the lineage and the line of the Von Erich stops, but it's not. We have a whole nother generation. Kerry's daughter, Lacey, wrestled for 3 years for a company called TNA. She had had a workout with the WWE, didn't really work out, but went and gave a shot. She, again, I mean, just to be Kerry's daughter.
Yeah, but yeah, like it's bad that it didn't turn out, but based on what's happened previously, that's good.
Yeah, yeah, she's still
like
alive.
Because everyone within this like line that does this kind of stuff, it doesn't seem to turn out right.
Yeah, and then you have Kevin's sons, the only remaining living member of the Von Erich children. Marshall and Ross debuted in 2012. They're still actively wrestling today. Kind of cool that Marshall...
Those are Kevin's sons.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Marshall actually wrestles barefoot, just like his dad does, or did. So you kind of have that cool little passing of the torch. Kevin officially retired from wrestling in July 2017. He wrestled a six-man tag with his two sons over in Israel, and they all finished the career with the Iron Claw. Yeah. Kevin's just kind of a cool, laid-back, hippie dude now. They're making plans to move back to Texas. I think the city's called Boren, Texas. But they own 20-plus acres in Kauai, in Hawaii. And Kevin just kind of walks around and lives a life of bartering with neighbors. They have, like, a waterfall on their property and all this kind of stuff. So he's just a real... kind of in a peaceful, serene, tranquil place.
That's what you would have to do.
Yeah,
if you'd been through all of this shit and everything like that, you would just literally have to get away from fucking everything, cut ties with everything that was related to that life, and just try to find some semblance of peace, just based on not only what you've experienced, but what you've seen, like finding your brothers and shit.
Yeah, and just to be able to live through that in... to be the one that was brave enough to live. Like, you, out of everybody, I mean, Jack Jr. obviously couldn't control what had happened to him. David, possibly to a certain extent, couldn't control what had happened to him. But everybody else, besides Fritz having cancer...
Well, I can say David's lifestyle contributed to it, because if he was injured and that led to anything else,
yeah,
it was exacerbated and caused, if not caused by, then definitely made much, much worse by his continued lifestyle.
Yeah. Kevin's been through 10 lifetimes, and it's really kind of cool that he can see Marshall and Ross like live and enjoy something that maybe he didn't enjoy so much beforehand.
Yeah. It's gotta be worrying as shit though too.
Oh yeah. I don't know how much really worry it is though, because he was able to kind of do things different than Fritz did. And for as much as Kevin says, they just absolutely adored Fritz. He said that Fritz was a good dad. They loved him. one of the funny stories that he told about when they were kids was they didn't ever want to go and watch Fritz wrestle in person because he was still a heel at that point.
Yeah.
So they would hate to hear their dad being booed.
Oh yeah.
So they would turn on the TV set at home, and, four of them would cover their eyes and one of them would watch. And then when Fritz started to win, he would tell the others that the dad was winning. So then they would all start watching until things started to change in the ebb and flow of the match. And then four of them would cover their eyes and a new one would sit there and watch through it. Like, that's how much they loved watching that's their dad wrestle. Crazy. Yeah. But at the same time, you have, like you kind of alluded to through the whole thing, like Fritz almost put business in front of family.
Yeah.
He needed these guys out there to continue to run his stuff.
Oh,
he was a taskmaster.
Yeah, definitely.
He definitely pushed them a little bit further. And I don't know the whole story on how Marshall and Ross came to wrestling, but just the fact that they wanted to still do it is. Kevin definitely has to look at
hopefully it. Hopefully, have a much healthier outlook. And
yeah. Like the relationship, I believe, is probably much better than they ever had with Fritz.
You'd mentioned something to me that you were going to kind of give me some details on. You were mentioning how they would never let Hulk Hogan and one of the brothers be in the same, it was something about a size thing, wasn't it? That he was bigger, like he had bigger arms or something
Like, yeah. Kerry, they would never let like any sort of promo pictures or anything like that. They would never allow those two to be like together at the same time because it almost ruined the mystique of Hogan. Hogan was taller and he was definitely a thicker guy. But as far as like the muscle definition and the biceps and anything like that, Kerry was so big and so chiseled that it almost made Hogan look small. So they had to kind of keep them separate during media or anything like that.
That's
because
fucking cool.
It would almost lead to people being like, well, Hogan's not as large a person.
Yeah, exactly. It ruins some of the Hulk.
Yeah.
The Hulk mystique.
Yep.
That's fucking cool.
So for a guy who wrestled with one foot for the latter part of his career, it's just a really incredible thing to know that he could keep himself in shape. That's part of the reason why I believe that steroids were involved, because Hogan was a pretty big roid freak
too. And it was Kerry, right?
Yeah, Kerry. Yeah. So yeah, man, it's I'm very excited and interested to see the movie and just kind of see how it plays out. But it's just the perfect thing to do.
It's Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah,
is what it is.
Yeah, to have a family that ran through just so much tragedy and heartache, but somebody who really helped shape the wrestling world in territories, and that some people weren't a fan of because they just didn't really like the mystique of being a pure Christian family that had so many issues on the surface.
Well, shit, man, it's interesting enough that it's getting its own movie, like a big movie.
Yeah, but for the most part, you know,
that's got to be kind of a cool thing. Like, do you feel like it, you know, that feeling when you find like a small band and then like you've been listening to them for a while and then it blows up and everyone's like, have you heard of this band? And then you feel like saying, well, yeah, I listened to them for years, like, because you're going to sound like you're trying to make some shit up. When stuff like this like comes out, do you almost feel like because you have already looked into this and this is something that you already knew so much about that you were just like, it's like fan service. It's like wish fulfillment in a way.
Yeah, this is part of me that I don't like, and it's kind of the asshole in me, but there are some things where like when I see a movie come out or I see like somebody else is like, oh shit, have you heard about this? And it's something that I've enjoyed for a while. It's like, it's exactly like when Netflix did the documentary about Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
I almost didn't like that because I enjoy serial killers so much. You like having your
little Dahmer secret?
Yeah. And to see people be like, oh my God, have you seen Dahmer? Do you know how popular that is and all that shit? It's like, yeah, I did. And I don't like that you're encroaching on my shit.
But at the same time, it's that, but you can't say shit because you're like, listen, I've been looking into serial killers real fucking deep years before you.
And it's the same thing with wrestling. When this comes out, I'm just so excited about it that nothing's really going to ruin it for me. But if this comes out and there's like this brand new renewed interest in old wrestling, it's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for most of my life. And now just because this movie comes out, everybody really is interested in the Von Erichs and everybody like that. Like, no, we can't do it. But I do say go see this film because I think it's going to be pretty incredible. Everything that I've seen that A23 has done has been
I feel like this is going to be the perfect accompaniment to this movie.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I kind of wanted to get the real story out there, and we can come back to it eventually and see, you know, how close I was or how close they were.
Yeah, definitely. Let us know what you think. And then even after the movie comes out, if you go back and this you're listening to this after the movie comes out because it spurred your interest, yeah, let us know what you thought about the podcast and then what you thought about the movie too.
There's going to be way more information in this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for joining us for another week, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Peace.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another episode. If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe and like button. Follow us. If you didn't like what you heard, still hit that anyway, because we'll probably cover something in the future that you do like. Please follow us on our social media. Adam, hit them with it.
Our Instagram is historicallyhighpod, historicallyhighpod, and we are on Twitter at historicallyhigh, that's historicallyhi.
All right. And if you guys want to send in any feedback, suggestions, hit us up on those two, or you can even do it on Gmail. It's historicallyhighpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.
Peace.